Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Alaska Congressman Don Young declined an opportunity yesterday to criticize President Trump for tweets he wrote that are widely viewed as racist. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports on the latest political reverberations from the president's words.
The U.S. House voted to condemn the statements Trump made Sunday when he said four members of Congress, all women of color, should go back to where they came from. Young voted no, as did all but four Republicans. In a press statement afterward, Young said the non-binding resolution only contributes to partisan rancor. He did not mention what the president said, but did put in a plug for diversity among his colleagues in the House. In fact, our varied perspectives makes us more responsive to the needs of a nation of many people, Young's statement reads. Of the three people representing Alaska in Congress, only Senator Lisa Murkowski has criticized Trump. In social media posts, she called his remarks on Twitter spiteful and absolutely unacceptable. Some of her constituents chided her for not calling them racist. Murkowski says the label applies.
Do you think the president's tweet was racist?
I took it in that context, yes.
She says she chose her words to apply more broadly because she says lots of people have escalated the rhetoric.
This is a reminder to us all that our words matter and we need to use our words wisely.
Senator Dan Sullivan called for civility but didn't criticize Trump. Asked whether the president's tweet was racist, Sullivan issued a statement Monday night saying the Democratic Party has turned to the far left and has bad policies on energy, border security, and Israel, but that Republicans and Democrats need to debate respectfully. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Wind is posing problems for firefighters trying to secure line around a wildfire off the Parks Highway near Anderson. The State Division of Forestry reports that wind-borne embers from the Kobe Fire started multiple spot fires Monday. Forestry says crews extinguished the spots with help from helicopter water drops. The spot fires increased the Kobe Fire's acreage from 1,100 to 1,300 acres. The state says the fire remains 0% contained, but 155 firefighters are working to build line and get hose laid around the blaze, located about 10 miles south of Anderson near Parks Highway milepost 275. The cause of the fire, which started last Thursday and briefly prompted an evacuation order for two remote subdivisions, remains under investigation. A wildfire burning off Chena Hot Springs Road east of Fairbanks continues to grow. The Alaska Division of Forestry reports that the Nugget Creek Fire was overflown Monday, and remapping puts the blaze at 19,000 acres, up from 16,000 on July 9th. A forestry post says the Nugget Creek Fire is most active on its south and east sides, away from Chena Hot Springs Road and the Chena River. The Nugget Creek Fire was started by lightning June 21st and is burning in the Chena River State Recreation Area, a limited protection zone. It's not being fought, and forestry says it burned up to the Nugget Creek public use cabin, but that pumps, hoses, and sprinklers protected the structure, which remains closed along with the nearby Mastodon Trail. Meanwhile, a new lightning-caused wildfire is burning southeast of the Nugget Creek blaze. The State House Finance Committee is holding a public hearing in Fairbanks today on a bill that would set the amount of this fall's permanent fund dividend check. The legislation would reduce the check amount from the $3,000 dictated by a 1982 formula and restore operating and capital budget line items vetoed by Governor Dunleavy. The hearing on HB 2001 runs from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Fairbanks Legislative Information Office. The public can testify in person by calling or via email. Similar hearings were held in Anchorage and Wasilla Monday and Tuesday. The bill is being considered as legislators meet for a second special session called by the governor to set the amount of this year's PFD. It's uncertain if the bill's budget provision falls within the session's specific call. Monday was the first day for candidates to file to run for office in this October's Fairbanks North Star Borough municipal election. Among early filers are political newcomer Lakeisha Jordan, who's running for City of Fairbanks mayor. According to her campaign website, Jordan serves on the board of directors of Thrive Alaska Head Start, and an online statement on her campaign Facebook page emphasizes her experience advocating for at-risk communities.
The truth of the matter is we're a community that needs to know how to come together. Not to say, hey, I'm black, what are you going to do about my issues? Hey, I'm native, what are you going to do about my issues? hey, I'm gay, what are you gonna do about my issues? It's to say, hey, I'm a part of this strong community. You might actually be able to help us enhance the entire community.
Incumbent Mayor Jim Matherly is expected to file for re-election, and former Borough Assembly member Catherine Dodge is also running, but has also yet to officially file. Fairbanks City Council member Valerie Therrien has filed to retain her seat, and Charles Foster III has filed to run against her. Aaron Gibson has filed to run for Council Seat D. Thomas McGee has filed to run for one of two open seats on the North Pole City Council. For the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, incumbent Sean Tackey is running to retain his seat, and two candidates have filed to run for Seat C, Jeffrey Rensel and Mindy O'Neill. Meanwhile, 12 people have filed to fill that seat until the election because its current occupant, Andrew Gray, is resigning to move out of state. The Seat C applicants will be considered by the Assembly at a July 31st meeting. The World Eskimo Indian Olympics opened today in Fairbanks. 4 days of Indigenous games, Native dancing, and artwork will be featured at the annual event at the Carlson Center. KUAC's Robin reports.
Volunteers are carefully measuring a marked distance on the floating wooden floor of the Carlson Center. A large square will be the walking track for the four-man carry, the ear weight, and the knuckle hop. All of those games are won by going the distance, so the measurement has to be meticulous. Last year, a record was set in the four-man carry, which is where a big person has four skinny folks hanging off of him and tries to walk the distance carrying about 600 pounds, until he can't. Like all WIO games, it mimics the skills needed to survive in Alaska and the Arctic. Like the toe kick mimics walking on pan ice, the greased pole walk mimics crossing a creek on a log, or gutting, filleting, and scoring a salmon in 43 seconds, just to be efficient. Amber Appleby is on the World Eskimo Indian Olympics Board of Governors. She is a WIO competitor in her own right, but has also shared the winner's podium with her daughter.
My daughter was 12, and we did the Indian stick pull together. I got the gold and she got third, and then when she turned 13, she kicked my butt and got the gold, and I took second to her.
Appleby says all ages participate in the events, and they come from all over Alaska. In previous years, there have been participants from Canada and the lower 48, Russia, Greenland, and Scandinavia. Appleby says she would like to have competitors come from Hawaii. She says participants sometimes show up out of the blue to compete or dance.
Some people will pre-register over the internet, and same with the dance groups, but many people just show up the day of registration and sign up then.
Athlete registration begins today at 10 a.m., and the race of the Torch 5K is at 3:30 at the Carlson Center. The main opening ceremonies start tonight at 6 o'clock. Daytime events are free, and admission fee is charged in the evening when more events are scheduled. To encourage more people to come, there's a new discount this year of 10% on a family season pass and 15% for a season ticket for those with Native heritage. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And I'm Dan Bross.